This is the Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose on April the 7th, 2000. Our speaker is Mark Epp of San Jose. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
If you want to get your coffee, get up and go get it. Don't let me bother you. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Mark. Glad to be here tonight. I had a triple shot at Starbucks about an hour ago, and he threw in an extra shot just for fun, and I'm zinging, boy, I'll tell you. I'm nervous as a cat shitting pizza right now. I think I'm nervous. I don't know what I am. It's going to take a while to smooth this one over. I feel like I'm on a chocolate run. If anybody's got any, bring me up a little piece. I could use it. I'm glad to be sober today. That means a lot to me. Over and above anything that might happen to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, it is a treat to be sober. I'm one of the people in AA who just seems to think that sobriety is a real good deal for me. My ex-dope dealer's in here, and she knows sobriety is good for me. Matter of fact, she got sober on my couch after I got sober. Showed up with her dogs in her sports car. They were Great Danes. And I won't tell her story. This is my hour. Why is it that only guys stand up and introduce themselves as newcomers? I was waiting for some new girls, you know, because I wanted to watch all the guys' heads go, hey, she's new, let's get her. But no, it's all the gals in here with time, and they're all going, hey, he's new, let's get him. I know how they think around here. My sobriety date is January 31st, 1989, and that's the date I was given. I think I got ripped off by a few days. I was drunk when I got sober. And I'm really not sure. My ex-wife gave me a date, and I didn't like her very good then, and I really think she robbed me from a day or two. I got sober with a guy named Russ. Those of you that have been around here a while, you know Russ. I wanted to kill Russ. We got sober on the same day, and about 10 months into it, he changed his sobriety date. And I heard him change it, and I thought, I think I'll kill him. I don't know why I think that way. I just, you know, we would come in together with toilet paper on our face. We weren't shaving very well. This was about 6 weeks after we got sober. When I got sober, I was shaving with the dog clippers. Well, I like to call them dog clippers. They call them groomsmen now. I'd use it on my, hey, Scotty, you made another meeting, huh? You got some candy back there? Why don't you and I have some? We both got the shakes tonight. Oh, you brought Dickhead Doyle. Wow. Boy, I'm surrounded by my mentors tonight. It's a room full of liars if you really want to know the truth. Escondido. Who the hell'd want to live in Escondido? Oh, well. Anyway, come on in. Take a seat. There's a lot of seats around here if you want one. So I got more coffee. I figured I hadn't had enough, so I got some decaf. Oh, God. Do you guys ever do too much speed? That's how I feel. You just feel like you're about to get ready to throw up, you know? Kind of like drinking, you know? Shave it. Anyway, I was about two, and I heard my dad come down the hall, and he stubbed his toe, and he was cussing, and he was yelling, and he snapped me out of this peaceful spot I was in. I was sitting in my room with my sister. She was in one crib, and I was in the other, and I got scared, I think, for the first time in my life that I remembered. And then somewhere along the line, I had this weird dream that this lady with bunny ears came in and changed my diapers. And her name was Lita, and she lived in the creek in Palo Alto. We lived in what was called the Palo Alto Cattery at that time. And my old man worked two jobs, and Mom worked She worked up at Eastman Kodak up on the hill up Page Mill Road. And I was allergic to cats and didn't know it. And I remember hearing my folks talk about I was sick all the time. I was always sick. Always sick. And I couldn't figure out what the hell was the matter with me. They kept taking me to the doctor and taking me to they gave me goat's milk, you know. What it was they took me off the tit and I had an allergic reaction out of the milk. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that. That's that other group you share that at. And they put me on goat's milk. I didn't like goat's milk. I still don't like goat's milk. I don't like goat's cheese. I don't like anything about goats. You know, when I got drunk, I used to butt heads with the goat. That's how drunk I'd get, you know. And they'd win. Horny little dudes, you know, they'd always win. And then they'd look at me funny after you butt heads with them. They look at you weird like, what are you, stupid? You know? That was long into my drinking, though, when I was doing that. Anyway, I was talking to my mother about that lady in the creek, and she said, yeah, there was a lady that used to run through the creek. And it's probably alcoholic, I don't know. I mean, a lot of us have been to the creek. I used to sleep in an old 49 milk truck, 1949 Chevy converted milk truck. Didn't have any brakes. You want to slow down, you gear her down and take a shot off of that whiskey and hope, you know. It wasn't a problem. I just, you know, I get nervous when people are with me and they go, whoa, shut up, take a drink, I tell them. We went to Lake Del Valle one day, come down that big old hill and had that hot vodka. Cassandra was with me. God, I keep looking for her. I need to clean some wreckage up with her. And scared the hell out of her. Didn't scare me. I had my bottle. I had my little Baba. That was... Mom and Dad used to give me a little Baba. And we moved into Sunnyvale. I don't remember moving to Sunnyvale. I really don't remember much. I just remember being afraid, and then we moved, and then all of a sudden I'm going to school. And I used to tell the story about how we'd go to school, and we'd walk through the old man Meany's orchard. And he'd shoot us in the ass with rock salt. I never saw old man Meany, and I never got hit with rock salt. But I do remember walking through the cherry orchards and stealing his cherries every now and again. A couple of cherries, you know. What's the difference? A couple of cherries, a couple of handfuls, a couple of truckloads. You know, I was a kid. I mean, I lived in the orchards around here. But I'd always tell these lies. I'd tell these little stories and things. And I was like seven. And then one day, we couldn't walk to school anymore. Take me 5 minutes to walk to school. We had to take the bus. It'd take a half an hour to get on the bus to go to school. That'd give you a resentment. I'm pissed off going to school already. I got to take the goddamn bus. I was mad. I always got mad. I get mad at everything that I don't get my way. I could get mad if the wind's blowing. I still get mad if the wind's blowing if I got something I want to do. Anyway, I always get mad. Getting mad. Talks about that in the book. Angry. Anger. The dubious luxury of normal people. You ever see a normal person get angry? They just sit there and they're quiet. It's like, you're boring. You know what? You get mad and break something, you know? Show me you're human. I used to do that a lot. I'd get mad and I'd hit the wall or I'd hit like that iron post. You know, and show everybody how tough you are and just go ahead and hit that iron. Man, that would hurt today. You know, I think about those things I did when I was young. Young and dumb and full of energy. You guys, you've been to them groups. I know you have. So, I got mad at the bus. I didn't want to take the bus. So one day I decided I'm going to lay down in front of the bus. The bus is coming down the road, and I decided I'm going to lay down in front of the bus. And I'm seven. And he almost ran me over. And then he got out and yelled at me. And he, you get in here! And he took me to DJ Shatanian. That was my principal. DJ. DJ Shatanian. Big guy, big, deep, booming voice. You know, looked like, whatever his name was on TV. Joe Cannon. And Cannon looked like my dad, so I was afraid. And he had a big-ass paddle up on the wall. And you go in there and he talk to you and you look at that paddle. And you know you're going to get a paddle. And my old man got called in, and he tells DJ, DJ, anytime you need to whip his ass, feel free. I didn't like that. So I tried to be a little better boy, and I was trying. So Mom and Dad always had these little parties, and the family would come over, and they'd play cards. They played cards. I don't know how they did this. They played cards all night long, and they had a good time. Except when they got in a fight, or if somebody was yelling at somebody, or one of the brothers came over, and then there would be a fist fight. And we were young, my sister and I spent a lot of nights sleeping on her floor. Now, I wanted to spend a lot of nights sleeping in her bed, but she made me sleep on the floor. I was young, and those feelings were starting to show up, and I thought, well, if she's got to be good enough for our family, you know, she's my sister, so I should be able to sleep with her. Yeah, it happens to young boys. I think it happens to young girls, too. That's how they end up with babies when they're really young, like 15 and 16. But she said no, and I was glad she said no, so I didn't have to deal with that, but I've had to deal with a lot of other family topic issue things. Those of you that are in the room, never had a family problem? Good for you. I don't know why. You know, you should have family problems. They help you grow. They broaden your mind. They help you expand. And we would kind of beg mom and dad to stop hitting one another is what we'd do. And I spent a lot of nights with her, and we were afraid. And some nights we'd beg mom, and some nights we'd beg dad. And we'd beg them both. Then they'd beg us later on in life. They'd beg us not to drink or use narcotics. They were playing cards. Everything was fine and dandy. I was sitting on Dad's lap. I remember having these little pajamas with the feet in them. And he gave me a little shot of his highball. He used to drink like Sunnybrook and Old Granddad and old nasty whiskey, you know. And I kept thinking, God, they're so mellow and happy and loving. And that whiskey smelled good with them cigarettes, you know. And the smoke would come out of their nose, and some of them would blow smoke rings like across the room. I go, wow. You know, my uncle, he was blind in one eye and he couldn't see out of the other. And he'd play cards. He'd put the cards down his shirt and he'd say, what card do you want? And he'd pull that son of a bitch out. I don't know how he'd do it every time. He was like a little magician, crooked guy. I don't know what he did, but he died. He died drunk. One of the sheriffs in town kept bringing him booze. He died drunk. My dad died drunk. I could die drunk. God, I hope I don't. I hope I don't. A lot of people in AA get sober and then they get well. And then they think, well, I don't have to come no more. They go away and then they drink again. Sometimes it's hard drinking. Sometimes it's hard staying sober. But I was just a little guy with feet in my pajamas, and I had a little snort of that highball, and I went to bed. Because they wanted to get rid of the kids, you know, get rid of the kids so we can play some cards and have some fun and laugh and, you know, tickle one another. And that booze wore off, and I wanted some more booze. It was an amazing thing what happened to me. I got some booze, and I liked it. Boy, I really liked it. And I went back out, and I cuddled back up against Dad, and wanted a little more, you know, and, you know, you pester them enough, they'll give you another snort and you could just go to bed, you know what I mean? And I started my little journey with his booze. And then I got in that little bus thing with the bus driver, and I got scared, and then I found Dad's Sunnybrook in the cabinet one day. I knew I shouldn't drink it, but I reached up in the cabinet and I got a big old blast of that stuff, and God, it burnt. It felt like hell. And I couldn't imagine why anybody drank it. And the next thing I know, I was getting warmer. My gut was getting warm, and I felt better. And then I had to have a little more. And I don't remember what happened after that, but I remember that somewhere in that period, I started putting water in Dad's whiskey. And one day he come into my room, and he says, you know, son, I don't mind if you're drinking, but I don't want you watering down my whiskey. And I was playing baseball. Mitch and I played a lot of ball together. And Mitch knew my dad, you know. Shit, everybody knew my dad. My dad was the president of the Little League. You know, he worked for the city. He was the superintendent of public works. You know, he had a great job. Be alcoholic, you know. Of course, I think anybody in Little League's an alcoholic. Maybe not today, but in those days, we were all alcoholics. Even the kids. PCP smokers, marijuana dealers, you know. the mothers were semi-prostitutes, and, you know, who knows what we were doing, but we were having fun. We were all hanging out in the park. Remember the night I got busted by the cops that came down and raided the park? Shit, we had cops in the trees. They were coming out of the trees after me, man. I had a big bag of marijuana. I was self-employed then. And, about 14. Real smart, self-employed businessman. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. And I lied like a son of a bitch to Dad, you know. Is that your dope? No, Dad, it wasn't mine. I'll back you to the wall if it ain't yours. Well, it ain't mine. You know, I didn't know he was using my sister as a decoy and some drug bust going on down the road. You know, I mean, there was some crazy shit going down in my house, man. We grew up with some weird, weird things. The aunts would come over, they want to kiss you high. Well, they'd kiss the girls on the cheek and they'd come up to me and they'd slip you a little tongue, you know what I mean? Oh, wow, she's my aunt, man. Well, she's drunk, don't worry about her. Well, what about the aunt? She's smoking dope, you know? I had two aunts, they were sisters, and they both loved their tongues. I just want to share. Now, my uncles would do the same thing, and they'd go after my mom. My mom, I'd always see her poking my uncles, you know? And then they'd go after my sister, and I'd be, God, yeah, oh, boy. It's amazing, you know, a family. She ain't good enough for their family. She ain't good enough for our family, neither. You know, that's the way we grew up. And it just didn't seem right. It just didn't seem right. It's not the way it was supposed to be, but it's just the way it was. You know what I mean? So, I was mouthing off to this guy, and he decides he's going to kick my ass one day. Big old boy. And a buddy of mine showed up, and instead of me getting my ass kicked, this guy beat this other guy up, and I got away with it. See, I didn't. And I started it. And I wasn't going to tell nobody I started this thing, you know. Well, this guy's still down in the creek if he's still alive. And he'd come out of the creek every now and again, then he'd go back down in the creek. He ran around town painting letters on curbs, and he bought a house, and everything was going well, and then he got loaded again, and he ended up back down in the creek again. And I had some knots on him from getting beat up. And, you know, when I was growing up, there was a couple of guys that I admired them. They were ball players. And that was the only thing we had in town, was to play ball. And they told me in high school, well, get into real estate or electronics. And I decided I want to be a ditch digger, you know. And I looked up to these guys that were playing ball. And they'd walk around, but then they died. They overdosed. And Vietnam got going, and we lost some guys in Vietnam, and they come back, and they weren't the same guys anymore, and it was a free love era. My first concert was the Creedence Clearwater, and at the fairgrounds, and my sister was up front. God, we were all smoking dope. What a treat that was! Long-haired, hippy-dippy looking weirdos, you know. I fit right in when I was sober, or when I first got sober, but back then I was young and dumb and young, and God, they were running around, they didn't have any clothes on, some of them, you know, and I liked that. I thought that was kind of neat. You go out and do that, you know. It only costs you $8 and you get to go see all these people run around naked, you know. Not all the time, but sometimes, you know, just... It might be raining, or it might be sunny, or you never know. You never can tell when they're going to take their clothes off. They just, all of a sudden, they're gone. It's kind of like an AA, you know. You go to a midnight meeting sometimes, you see them walking around here in their bra and panties, you know. At least at the old room they did. They must not get sober like they did when I was first got sober, because when I first got sober, I swear to God, they were walking around in their bra and panties. Either that or I was seeing things. There was a guy in the back of the room one night. He was masturbating. One afternoon, they had to get rid of him. I don't know why. They let him finish. Boy, there's something else here, aren't they? And then there was another guy. They called him Rainbow. He pulled out a knife and he took off a hunk of a friend of mine's hair. He didn't like him, so he took off a hunk of his hair. I always think about that. Guys with ponytails, you know? I used to have long hair. But I think, I wonder what he'd do if we just snip, you know? I think. I sit in the back of the room back where Mike is, and I wonder what people would look like up here naked if they take off all their clothes, what they'd look like. Would they be so pompous if they didn't have any clothes on? How do you get even with people around here, you know? Especially if you're new. You don't fit in. You don't feel right. You're probably nervous. Well, you might be okay right now, but Jesus, what are you going to do in a half an hour when it's time to go home? And you're going to go home to your little room and nobody's going to be there. And you're going to be alone. What are you going to do then? You know, what are we going to give you then? A book? Maybe. I don't know. If you're really nice, we could give you some pictures. Go buy a different book. I don't know what you're going to do. If you're new, you need some books. What the hell? Don't drink. Smoke. Burn down the building. You know, that's what I used to do. I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up with that cigarette rolling around my butt and it'd burn a hole in my ass in the sheets. God. I was still living at home and Dad would come home. Sometimes he'd come home early. Sometimes he'd come early would be like 10. That would be a good time. Sometimes he'd come home at 2 to 4. And between 2 and 4, he'd always come in and he'd say, he'd wake me up. You asleep? No. You know, because you can hear that truck pulling in. And he'd always whistle. He whistled everywhere he went. He'd always whistle. And he had a hell of a time getting a key in the hole because Mom had turned the lights out. He just couldn't find a hole. Well, he didn't get there much. And he'd come in and he'd say, I love you. I love you, son. You know, I was out a little late. I'm sorry, you know, I'm drunk or not scooting. But I understood because I thought he was having fun. You know, that meant fun to me. He's out having fun. He's with his friends. And but then it started to be Christmas, you know. And Christmas is supposed to be a family time. And it'd be 7, and he didn't show. And it'd be 8, and then it'd be 10. And then it'd be too late, you know. And then the next Christmas would come. And the same thing. And then one year we said, well, wait till 8. And if he's not here at 8, we'll do it without him. And, you know, just a little disappointments in life. I remember it was April. His birthday is April 5th. I miss him. I miss my dad. I miss him bad. He's been gone 13 years now. And I just, God, I miss him. And April 5th was his birthday. And it was sometime in April. And behind his chair was a couple of his Christmas presents that he hadn't opened. And it was time to open them. And, you know, I mean, that's alcoholism. You know, that's alcoholism. You get to a place where you're too prideful to do whatever you got to do, so you got to get mad at it and make it go away, or just be quiet and hope that it subsides. And sometimes it's a few months. And there it is. You know, for me, it's been 35 years now that it was that April, and I remember that. And it wasn't his fault. You know, it wasn't his fault, but I remember that. I remember that because I was sober. You know, kind of. There's an awful lot of days where I got drunk and I don't remember. I don't remember a lot of things that used to happen. You know, I got married when I was 21, and I didn't want to get married, but I needed somebody to take care of me. I wasn't capable of taking care of myself anymore. I'd go out, I'd get drunk, I'd have a good time, and then the next thing I know, somebody's kicking my butt. And it was Jack Daniels. Well, I won't drink Jack Daniels no more. And every time I drank Jack, see? Can't even think about this shit without getting baffled. I'd get my butt kicked every time. And about the fifth time, I said, man, that's it. You know? I don't even want to try. But I sure look at the bottle, I go, I'll beat you, you son of a bitch. You know, it's an amazing thing. I tried to beat alcohol all these years. I tried to whip this stuff. Well, I was sitting there reading one day. I'm reading a bottle and it says spirits. And I went, yeah, that's what I need. I need spirits. And I needed to be a little more sensitive. So my buddy Louie and I were drinking Blue Nun. And I wanted to get right with Jesus, you know. I really needed to get right. I don't know why I needed to get right with Jesus, but I wanted to get right with Jesus, you know. I was 18 when I got my first tattoo. I got Jesus tattooed on my arm. I'm drunk and I can't find my way home half the time. And I'm robbing cars and I don't have enough money. I joined the Navy or I got an option. Join the Navy or go to prison. Or join the service or go to prison. And, you know, I mean, I'm alcoholic. I'm not stupid. So I joined the service and started robbing people. the only reason I was robbing cars was because I didn't make enough money. And I was taking everything I owned to the hawk shop. Everything. And then I borrow things. Kind of like your TV. You know those smooth talkers? I ran a pretty good game when I was young. Really? And I'd borrow your stuff and I'd hawk it. Now, I'm not proud about that, but, when you're drinking Primo beer, they don't even make Primo beer anymore. I don't even think they put booze in Primo beer. I think they outlawed it or something. The Hawaiians must have went crazy and they got rid of it. But it was 25 cents a can back then. We had a beer machine. I don't know if any of you ever seen a beer machine, but I had one right down the hall, baby. I lived at the Wave Cage. There was 200 women there. And I'd go home with one, and I'd wake up somewhere else with somebody else, wondering where the hell I was and how did I get there. And one night I got busted for urinating in public. Didn't even know I did that. Really, kind of. Kind of fading in and out. I do it all the time now. I don't care. I got a big backyard. I go out and bless the ground. I write my name in the snow. I'm headed to the mountains. I write my name in the snow. I don't give a damn anymore. I don't care. One of God's kids, we're going to write. What the hell? Have a little fun with your life, for Christ's sakes. Sobriety doesn't have to be all stupid, boring, and glum. It says that. You don't have to be rolling down the cattle guard all the time, falling in a hole. Who cares? Have a little fun. Go out and bark at the moon once in a while. I hope you get arrested. I stopped by a buddy of mine's shop today in Los Gatos because I heard one of my boys is sitting out in Camp Elmwood. He went on a... Oh, you know Camp Elmwood? And he's at Camp Elmwood. He got a little upset with his girlfriend. He drank again, and he hit her. Oh, how does that happen? That's not funny. He's going to be there a while. Domestic violence, they call it now. We called it love back when I was a kid. She slept with a butcher knife under her pillow, and I slept with a shotgun under my bed. We slept in separate rooms, and we met in the hall. We had hall sex. You know how hall sex is. Fuck you, fuck you. That was true love. If you don't believe me, ask her. She'll tell you. And then it's scary when you're living like that. It's terrifying to live that way. It's a horrible way to go. But just people go, how come you sleep in separate rooms? I go, well, they taught me in the Navy. I better not be sleeping with anybody. And that's kind of the way I grew up. I'd get drunk and people would be in my bed. And I go, I didn't plan this. Who are you? This is my apartment. I locked the doors before I went to bed. What am I getting drunk, walking around at night? What am I doing? I don't know how you drank or used. But when I go to bed and I lock the goddamn door and I wake up and there's somebody in my bed, there's a problem. How did you get in here? And you know what happens generally is you're too dumbfounded to even ask the question. You don't want to know their name. What are you looking at me for? You're scaring me. Oh, God. Man or woman, who knows? Who knows? That gets even scarier. A lot of us don't want to admit that. You really got to check yourself out. Uh-oh. I got to share this story because it happened to me, and they told me don't share this, but I'm going to share it because it's important to me. This is the kind of shit that happens to me in sobriety. I don't know what's going to happen for you, but I went to work yesterday. Da-da-da. It's amazing. Stop at McDonald's, right? Tell the guy with me, he's a Mexican guy. Doesn't speak a lick of English. I said, you hungry? Yeah. So we stop at McDonald's. I hate McDonald's. I always get the runs from McDonald's, but I went to McDonald's. I get the runs before I got to talk, too. Hey, have a drink. So, I'd be a good bartender, don't you think? Give him a double and shut him up. Larry and I were in Monterey, and I got this shirt, and it had a little squiggly line with different colors on it, and it says Monterey. Pretty shirt. Denim. And this guy, the manager at McDonald's, is looking at me. And he winks. It's early in the morning for me. Nice shirt, he says. Yeah, it is, huh? Got this in Monterey. He says, I have one of those down my spine, tattooed. I'm pretty wild. Good for you, pal. What are you going to say? I says, you know, a lot of my friends are like that, but I'm not. And we went to work. And on the way to work, I was thinking, you know, that's growth for me. Really? Thank God for sobriety. My sober log is worse than a lot of people's drunk logs. I told you when I got sober, I wasn't doing too good. And I may as well share that little bit about that, because that's what we're here for. The first time around, my program of recovery, I was about 25. And I was getting pretty yellow. And I'd asked my wife for some help. And I sold all my baseball cards. I had a trunk full of baseball cards. Sold them for $50 so I could buy me some gin. And I didn't like gin. The guy came over. He says, are you sure you know what you're doing? I said, yeah, $50. And the prick wrote me a check. Yeah. Can you believe? I was pissed off. He wrote me a check. Here comes that anger thing again. It's like, you dirty bastard. Now you got to cash the check. I got 86 out of a 7-Eleven. Any of you ever get 86 out of a 7-Eleven? Don't you ever? Who got 86? You? Good for you. We can start our own group. With 7-Eleven, instead of these 12 steps, we'll call it 7-Eleven. Lucky 7-Eleven. Lucky to be alive today. Well, we got another barred day today. Where the hell was I? I was probably drunk again, huh? Oh, yeah, my baseball cards. God, could you imagine? The house down the street, $750,000? That's like a dozen cards that I had. But they're gone, you know. What are you going to do? Cry over spilt milk? No. When I go home and I'm alone, I weep. Screw that getting sad shit. Boy, I'll turn on music, crank up some country music or you know, Born to Lose or, you know. Put on some Luther Vandross. A chair is just a chair. Oh, Jesus. I saw him the other night. I think he's on speed again. I don't know. Boy, he lost a lot of weight. Looks good, though. Anyway, I'm finally starting to calm down, boy. Starbucks, I'm going to have to talk to that guy. He wants to be a manager, too. Should be a paramedic. Would you sit down? You look like a cop, for Christ's sakes. What do you do for a living? No, your friend. Aren't these flowers pretty? No, really. Don't they bring a nice light touch to the room? Wouldn't you think you're going to come to AA, it should be like a little pull chain light bulb in the middle of the room? I was 15 when Dad shoved me through the screen door. Right through the screen door. Get out of my house, you little son of a bitch. You upset me and you disgust me. You disgust me and you upset your mother. That's what he said. Don't come back if you're drinking. So I wait for him to go on vacation. Then I rob him. I go steal the venison out of the cupboard, out of his freezer, and chickens every now and again. I ate a lot of chicken, a lot of deer meat. And I take it home to thaw it out, and I put it in the cupboard. It'd take a while, you know, about 10 days. And you'd smell that smell, and you go... You know, you got to search through the beer cans and the dirty, what do you call them? Plates? Underwear. Just throw those babies away. You could smoke them, probably, huh? You're sitting at that table again. Yeah, I think you found a home, buddy. That's good. Good to have you here. No, really. Really. I mean, that's how it used to be. You know, that's what I got to look forward to. Waking up wondering who's who. You ever wonder how the hell it happens that way? You know, selling out one more time? God, I won't do that again. And I've been thinking about root beer schnapps for about a month. I've been sober 11 years. You know what? Root beer schnapps. I never had root beer schnapps. God, it tastes good. I know it tastes good. Take a little root beer schnapps, a little peach schnapps, smoke a little dope, have a little coke, do a little speed so you can go to work in the morning, have a little whiskey so you can mellow out a little bit. Then you're going to hit somebody, you know, just to get right. I'd wake up, I'd look at the truck. You ever do that? You ever get up in the morning and go out there? You know you hit something? Oh, God, I know I hit something. You got a knot on your head, and you go outside, and you look at the car. If you had a car. We had a car that had shit sticking out the sides, you know, the chrome strips. The muffler hanging down. We was down at Tootin' Totem Pizza right over here. Are they still there? I'm afraid to go there. Last time I went to Tootin' Totem Pizza, I ordered a pitcher of beer, a big old two glasses, two frosted tankards, and a pitcher of beer. Well, if you're going to drink, you may as well have cold beer, you know. If you want to drink vodka, drink it hot. You guys put it in a freezer. What kind of crap is that? Hot vodka goes straight to your brain. So I'm sitting in there, and she says, I have to go pee. Well, tell me more. Yeah. So I sit down with my beer and my glasses, and I'm waiting for my pizza, and it's mine, and I can't wait. And she says, are you going to drink that? I says, I have to go pee. So I got up and I left. I don't want to hear it no more. So I started walking home. Well, I lived about 5 miles from there. Down Payne, walked down Payne. Next thing I know, I hear that car, that alcoholic car with that muffler dragging along the ground. Oh, baby, here she comes. I'm thinking, how can I get out of here? So I run over to the side and I jump up this tree. And here she comes through the dirt. Boom, 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 boom. Shit flying out of the car and stuff. And she stops right in front of the tree. Here's your pizza! Out the window it goes. I said, damn, honey, I was hungry. So she put her in drive and she hit the tree. You son of a bitch! It was love, I'm telling you. It's love. God, I wish I'd have never had... Should have had 100 more of those days, you know. Those are good to look back on. They're funny for you. Can you imagine being in a tree and having a son of a bitch shake like that? I'm a tree man and I was scared. Anyway, so my life wasn't doing too good. I was 25, I get yellow. I asked her for help. She gave me a telephone number of a guy and I'd started this is rotary phone days. Okay, so I had to dial the shit, you know. And when you're drunk and you got to die, you got to keep hanging up. Ow! So it's frustrating when you're kind of lip dragging drunk and you just can't do it. You try so hard, but it doesn't work. And I finally got all these. And I heard her coming up the stairs. And as soon as she let that key in that door, boy, I got mad and I lit off into her. You know, cussing her out. She hadn't even come in the house to say hello or nothing. I just started tearing her up. And because she caught me. She caught me when I was at the point where I was going to give up. And I didn't want nobody to know I was giving up. I didn't want nobody to know I was giving up. You know, I can lay there on the bathroom floor staring at my reflection in the urine and ask for help. But have somebody come in and catch me trying to ask some man to help me. And I got to attack them like a lion. I mean, that's terrible. So, I had some more drinking to do. I had some more jail trips to do. I was the kind of guy, I'm diligent. I think you should always drink and drive. I don't think you should ever, ever drive without a drink. You should always face traffic with confidence. Especially if the cops are near. Because... you know, being nervous around cops is not a friendly atmosphere to be in. And I was always nervous when they were following me. About 5 years into sobriety, I was still nervous. Why are they following me now? Anyway, she ran away again. She was always running away. She kept a bag by... She got so used to me being an asshole that she would keep a bag by the door. right by the goddamn door. I'd come home and I'd look, I'd think, that bitch. You know? Now I'm mad at her because she's keeping her running clothes there by the door. I'm mad at her because she's got to run away from me. I keep thinking, well, then this time you're going to keep running too, boy. So where she runs? She runs to my sister's. She lets her in. I couldn't believe it. I said, you what? And then, oh, what's her name calls me up. She says to me, I found this place. And there was something in her voice. There was something in her voice. I don't know what it was. 33 years old I was. There was something in her voice. And I showed up to a meeting. I was a little drunk. I mean, if you're going to go to an AA meeting, you should be drunk, don't you think? Especially your first one. You don't want to go sober. It's scary. There's people there. And I liked it. So I kept coming back. I kept coming back drunk. Then they'd ask me if I want to read. I go, no, I got a headache. I didn't want to tell them, no, I'm scared to death. I'm about to pee my pants. Please don't ask me anything. I'm nervous. You know, don't do that. Don't be honest. You know who asked me was Walt. You know, Walt. Hey, you want to read? No, please don't hit me. Please don't make me work the steps. I'm scared. And, you know, I mean, everybody was smiling. It's like, God, how can you get away from this place? It's like a poison, you know? Well, it's a good poison. So, she was going to Al-Anon and wandered into A&A. And she directs me to A&A. Those of you that get sentenced by the judge or the court. Can you imagine? God, I wish I could have got a court card. The last time. I got a court card when I was 18, but they gave me what they call drug diversion when I was 18. You know what you get? You get loaded. You get diverted. I went overseas and didn't go. Then they threw me in jail. It's a vicious cycle. I hope if you're new that you keep coming back. There's probably more court cards in that basket than there are people in the room. Funny. How's that work? You know, I'm a pretty good mathematician, but that just doesn't even compute, really. No, really, welcome. A lot of people go, welcome home, and it's like, fuck, home? I hate home. You probably hate home, too, if you're still drinking. Not a real safe place to be. Uncomfortable. So I got sober. I don't know how I got sober. I had my last drink across the street from my house. Across the street, right across the street. I was drinking with an old guy named Johnny. And we drank all of his decanters. I turned into a beggar again. I hadn't had a drink in 7 years, and I started up again. Ah. I was out in the motorhome sniffing bottles, just dreaming and hoping and wishing that I could just, but knowing that I can't drink, and just kind of masturbating with the stuff, you know. Smell it real close, you know. Kind of like I used to do the gasoline. I like gas. I like paint. I like glue. I like some perfume. Not many. Shut up. Chica back there. So goddamn funny. You know, I didn't want to drink. I knew if I drank again that there'd be trouble. I knew that. They were working on my street, and they were putting in a sewer line. We bought a house. The family helped. You know, my uncle wanted me to have this house. He used to tell me, you're a perfect example. And I'd think, wow, you know, somebody finally has figured out that I'm an all right guy. He'd say, you're a perfect example of a horrible example. And he was a Navy guy, you know. He used to tell me stories about guys that would get drunk all the time and how they'd set them up with hookers and it would change their life. He'd talk about it in the book. It's in the big book. It says, talking about falling in love. You could fall in love and stop drinking. That's kind of like being with a hooker, ain't it? It was for me. I was 16 when that happened, 17. Had to quit going to them. They wouldn't play with me. I used to try to drive downtown. They wouldn't play with me. They'd look at me and they'd go, no way, baby. You know? And that's kind of sad when the hookers won't play with you. And I was trying. It's kind of like trying to be sober sometimes, you know. God does pretty good work. He's given me a blessing and given me another borrowed day today. And I need to remember that. I got a borrowed day. He gave me another borrowed day, and I didn't get drunk today. I didn't take no dope. And that's a big deal for me. For me. I'm not going to be the mayor of Saratoga. I know one of the mayors of Saratoga. He's an AA. There's a lot of prominent people that are in AA, but I'm not going to be one. I'm just going to be the guy. Just that guy. You know? Just me. That's all. And that's okay, because you know what? If I slide out past that, I'm going to be in big trouble, boy. I get that ego going, and I become something and somebody, and how wonderful I am, and start telling you what maybe you ought to do or whatever, and then I fall on my face. It's better to just share my stuff, and you share yours, and I listen, and you listen, and everybody seems to get along just fine, and we learn stories from one another about being sober. We all know how to get drunk. Maybe don't know how to get sober or stay sober. You know, I got divorced a few years ago. I didn't know how to get divorced. I'd never been divorced before. I was married for 18 years. 9 years ripping and running, 9 years clean and sober. And, you know, we got divorced. And that was a hard time. It was a hard time for me. It was different because I was out of my house. I left my home. And I left my dog. And I missed my dog. I missed my dog a lot. And it was a hard time for me at 8 years of sobriety. Took a few trips, went out of state. I've been privileged to go out of the country a few times. I got invited to go to Mexico with a couple of guys, and we've been going ever since. And, you know, that was a blessing. You know, I had a hard time going from Sunnyvale to Mountain View when I was drinking. And geographics were just weird for me. I'd get on a train and party with the bride and groom and end up in Wyoming and pull a rifle out and be in trouble, you know. I'm just looking at antelope, you know. They don't like it when you pull guns out on trains. Look at them through the scope, you know. You always got to zero in on the guy up ahead of you first, but they get a little nervous, you know. I wasn't really trying to scare them. I was just having a little fun. But, you know, sobriety can be different. I had to take extra shirts to bed when I got sober. It took about a week before I realized I needed to take some extra shirts to bed. And then it was a towel or two. I sweated a lot. I didn't go to a detox. I was afraid of detoxes. I was afraid of doctors. I was terrified of doctors. I was afraid they'd lock me up. Especially if I told them the truth about how I thought, because I was very angry. Very angry. And I was running that dog clipper across my face about every 5 days because I couldn't run a razor across my face. Because I couldn't stand looking in the mirror. I didn't like what I saw, and I'd always cut myself. And then one day I got fed up with me, and I kept hearing them say, well, you know what, you change everything. So I cut all my hair off. And that was different. And now all of a sudden I'm what my dad wanted me to be when I was a kid, you know. Because I begged him, please, Dad, please, 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 let me grow long hair. Let me grow long, you know. And now I'm just, please, I got to go get a haircut every 10 days, which is a pain in the ass. But, you know, I got to stay current with my hairdresser. And, hey, what the hell, you know. Cleanliness is next to godliness. They used to say that. They'd catch him in the bathroom. What are you doing? Cleanliness is next to godliness. I'll wash it as fast as I want to. Fine. It's an old Navy trick, just in case you get caught. Tell Mom. Mom? Well, what the heck? You know? Tell the truth around here. So, I got me a sponsor. I was talking to this guy. They said, you got to get a sponsor. Jesus, what the hell do I need a sponsor for? I want a woman, you know? I don't know how to talk to my wife. Give me a woman. Give me somebody to teach me how to talk to my wife. You know, I was calling her four-letter words all the time and getting mad. And she'd come bring dinner, and it wasn't what I wanted, so I'd throw it on the floor. Just a happy little chap. Any of you ever done that? Real proud moment. Some of those things. And they're all memories. They're all real parts of what they call alcoholism these days. I got sober at room 47 at Old Campbell High School and had a guy be my sponsor. Somebody just murdered his sister. And he wasn't coming into many meetings and he didn't look real happy. And we sat out on the bench and we talked. And I think that was the best thing that ever happened to me. He was kind of pissed off and we were thinking about killing that guy. And we had a lot in common. We were both pissed off. And we were both stone cold sober. And we knew that life wasn't working out the way it was supposed to be. And if you're one of them kind of people who really tries hard and things ain't working out the way you think that they're supposed to be, that's just life, you know. It talks about that in the book, too. Even though we tried hard and failed, I don't think it's failure. I just think it just didn't work sometimes. I've been known to sabotage my own self, shoot myself in the foot, you know, shoot my mouth off, practice behaviors that probably aren't becoming a gentleman or an officer, but I didn't like officers. I didn't get along with brown shoes or black shoes. But now I wear brown shoes, Dockers. I wouldn't be caught dead wearing them things when I got sober. I was packing a knife. I had guns in my truck and glad I had a truck. I was glad I had a truck, but I kept my weapons, you know. It was 2 years, 2 years sober. I was going to a meeting and we were coming over Winchester over the bridge out there at Camden, and this guy tries to pass me on the right. So I stopped, you know, right there, and I got out and I wanted to give him a spiritual awakening and I said, don't drive very well. You know, and I told him I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I hit him. And I asked him if he had a drinking problem. And he just looked kind of dumb at me. I says, answer me, I'm going to hit you again. God, I was crazy when I was sober. And he wasn't answering right, so I kind of bitch slapped him one more time. And then I got back in the truck after I explained to him that if he ever had a drinking problem, he should come to AA. And I got back in the truck, and then old What's-Her-Name started on me. He could have had a gun, and he could have shot you. I says, well, if that son of a bitch would have shot me, I wouldn't have to listen to your shit right now either. That's how we went to meetings. We went to meetings, we'd fight on the way to the meeting. It took like 2 years. We'd fight for 2 years on the way to the meeting, then things would mellow out a little bit. We'd fight on the way home to the meeting. God damn, it took about 7 years before we could go to a meeting and come back together, once, like maybe twice a month. And I went to meeting every day. It's just, you know, twice a month maybe you could make that run. We just didn't get along too good. We both had lots of people that we worked with, lots of people that we sponsored. We were wonderful. Everybody thought we were good people. You should go home with some of these people and watch what they do. Spend a day in their mind. Goddamn newcomers, I hate them. I got a little buddy right now. I can't even let him near my house. I'm afraid he's going to rob me, you know? And I've known him for years. I don't trust him anymore. I don't trust any of you. You know why I don't trust you? Because you shared your stories with me. All of you. Wouldn't trust any of you. Especially your children. You probably trained your children to rob people, too. Chica's family's in the moving business. You know, she got a connection there. Just wait for you to go out of town. Jed, I need my cut. Anyway, he says we got to work steps. And God, oh, man, anything but that. You know, I like talking to you. Let's go talk about getting this guy and murdering people and doing this stuff. But now we got to do steps. Oh, man, anything. But, you know, I mean, I'm sober. I don't need to do that, please. We ended up out in the back of the field, took a third step out in the grass. I was holding his hand. I thought, oh, God, here we go. Looking up at this big old bruiser, I'm thinking, oh, God, help me. He's bigger than I am. I don't know what I'm doing now. He's got his arm around me. I've been in that position before in jail. I didn't like that. Of course, I was doing a different third step then. You learn to dance in there, boy, I tell you. So, then I'd hang out at his house. I went to his house every day, get off work, and I'd be at his house. I'd be knocking on his door. Hey, you got a broad in there, you know. Hey, open the door. You know, if I don't get any, you can't have any either, you know. Nobody wants to play with me. He opens the door, sweat dripping down. Why? Oh, I got to come in. I got to talk to you. Son of a bitch. Boy, I was crazy when I got sober. Anyway, one night he decided I needed to write an inventory, so he threw a tablet at me. I got up to leave, and he pushed me back down in my chair by the head, and he said, you ain't leaving until you write your inventory. And I wrote my inventory, and then I shared it with him. And I'll show you how fast this son of a bitch works. I wrote my inventory that night. I shared it with him. We did 6 and 7. I had an 8-step list from the inventory I wrote. And when I left, he told me to go clean up my wreckage. And I went, God damn, that was fast. And all I had to do was clean up the wreckage of my past. And I would be done with step 9. Now, God knows, I mean, I robbed this store over here time and time and time again. And when I would come to meetings, it's like it's hard to go to a meeting because I got to pass by these stores I've been robbing. You know, I worked there, but I would steal their stuff. And I would go back in and again and again and again, giving them money. And the thing with me is that I get afraid. And so I go in there and I go, where's the manager? You go in your work clothes so you look kind of angry. And the manager comes up and goes, I used to rob you, and if you want to call the cops, that's fine, but I'm here to pay you back. And they go, gee? Oh, no. No, you give it to somebody who needs it. You know, that's always a good, I need it. So, then guilt will take over after a while, and you'll end up giving a little here and give a little there. And, you know, you don't always receive it back, but you keep giving, and things change. I'm not going to tell you life's been a party since I've been sober, but or that I've done everything perfect. The way that, you know, maybe that it's supposed to be. I don't know. I did it the way I did it, and I've had spectacular results as a result of doing things. I've had my friends joke with me, kid me, tell me I'm all screwed up. I had one guy with me, and then I made an amends. He says, now you got to go back and make amends for the amends you made. You didn't give it to the right guy. You're supposed to give it to the manager. You gave it to the worker. He's going to pocket that. I thought, I'll kill you, you know? I mean, that's all I could think. I got to kill my buddy, you know, for talking like that. Sober. Stone cold sober, man. That was about 5-6 years of sobriety. So I don't know how it's going to be for you. You know, I don't know what kind of emotional damage you've done or physical damage or monetary or whatever. But I know this much. You know, for me, things are different. It's not going to say that I don't miss my dad, or that I miss my mom, or I miss that dog I used to kick. You know? God, I felt bad about that dog. You know? I used to take him, and we lived in apartments, and I'd just take him up in the hills and let him go. You know? I'd lose him. And then I'd find another, and I'd bring it home, and we'd take the raid and spray a circle around the bed so the fleas wouldn't jump inside the circle. You know, I don't know how whacked out I was. You know, throw him on the back of the truck, go around the corner, and off goes the dog. He was a good dog. Fuck. You know, I mean, I get up in the morning, I got two bulldogs, and they're ugly, and they stink, and they slobber, and I kiss them goodbye when I go to work, and when I come home, I get down on the concrete, I lay on the concrete, and they crawl all over me. It's almost a sexual thing, but it's not. You know, I can't do that today. And I love my dogs, and they love me, you know. But I want to share this much with you, that, you know, I mean, if you got kids, or they go to Alley Kid, and cats go to Alley Cat, and my dogs need to go to Alley Dog. They, I pulled a rake out today. I threw a rake in my truck. My bulldog took my rake away from me. He didn't like the rake. He doesn't like the rototiller. I hate my neighbor. I wish he'd go get my neighbor, but I really don't like my neighbor, you know. And here we are in this spiritual program. We're praying for guidance and direction. And I'm telling God, you know, God, please take him home soon. I hate that guy, you know. I just want him to be with God, you know. Go in peace, you prick. You know? I do that with some of the guys I sponsor who don't read the book or go to meetings, and they don't call me, and they make me, I get to feeling less than, oh, God, I've been a poor sponsor. Fuck them. Tell God to kill them. You know? I don't have to deal with them. You know, hey, I don't know what's right or wrong. I just know it is. And my life is different. It's different. I couldn't string too many words together, you know, when I got sober. And I'm highly agitated. I'm extremely fearful at times. Emotionally unstable. You know, another triple coffee would do it. I'll be seeing zingers tonight driving down the highway. I'll be watching things floating that ain't there, and I'll be thinking, is that a UFO? And you know what I'm telling you? I saw one of those once, too. I've seen some burning bushes when I got sober. I saw a cross, glowing cross appear. Nobody else did. They'd probably think I'm a wacko if I was to share that story. But it's my story. And you know what? That cross lasted about 2 weeks. And then I told God, why don't you do that again? You know? I mean, let me tell God what to do. That would be good, don't you think? That'd be kind of like being a group chairman around here. Barbara, you still the group chairman? We're going to give it to Gail. So I'm surrounded by the people I got sober with. Those who came before me, those who have been in here since I got sober. And I wouldn't say we're a family. I wouldn't go that far. Oh, yeah, I would. You know, you guys are the people who put me back together, who share your stuff with me. And I swear to God, you've helped put me back together. I want to say one more time, because I went on a little mission there. In the ABCs in our book, it says that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own life. And B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And I took that to heart for about a month. And I went, these people don't know shit. It's me and God. That's all there is. Me and God. So I'm trying to have this conscious contact with God, and I'm just letting everybody else, they don't know nothing. I don't want to know them, and I'm living in fear again, because now all these people who have helped me in my sobriety don't mean much to me anymore, because I've discounted them. And it's just going to be me and God. And you know what? I don't have that good a connection with me and God. And I think God wants me to be with you. Which is hard for me, because now I've shared with you that I've discounted you. And you're the ones who helped me. So, God, I hate that beeper. Can I break it? So, where I'm getting at and what I'm trying to say is this. Though I came here in contempt of you, I think I was only contemptuous because I was afraid. And I was afraid that something might happen. I haven't gained anything since I've been here. I've lost a lot of things. I've lost a lot of fear. I've lost a lot of resentment. And a lot of hatred. Okay? I haven't gained anything. I haven't gained a thing. The book says that if you're going to look for the Master, to go deep within. And that's probably where you'll find that spirit. Deep within. That's where that spirit survives, and if you nurture that and take care of that, and you give that away and you share that with one another, we seem to get along okay. I'm still struggling. You know, I'm still struggling, and I want to be a better man. I want to read this thing that a guy gave me the other day, and then I'm going to shut this thing down because it's already too late. I got caught up in my bullshit, and a man came up to me. He's talking about root beer schnapps, and he said, Mr., please, whatever you're doing, don't take this drink. Just don't drink. And he gave me this card. It says, AA will not give you a ticket to heaven, nor will it keep you out of hell. But you can get sober long enough to make up your mind where you want to go. Thanks for helping me.